them terrorists. These boys have simply been misguided.
The group's use of social media and networking to recruit, to plan, to plot attacks against the homeland or U.S. interests abroad. We do know the terrorists use social media, and all agree the terrorist groups use these tools ultimately to their advantage. An individual willingly uses Facebook, Twitter, or the comments section of a newspaper website, they in effect forfeit their right to an expectation of privacy. Intelligence gathering, such as Twitter or Facebook, it may be appropriate to follow them. DHS used multiple sets of social networking blogs, including Facebook, Twitter, three different blogs, and reader comments in newspapers. But who's directing what's being monitored?
And together with the National Operations Center, we both agree that we don't care about First Amendment speech. 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 We don't care about First Amendment speech.
Who's directing what's being monitored? Who's directing what's being monitored? Who's directing what's being monitored? Who's directing what's being monitored?
American media is a business.
Business has a mission, not to inform, but to entertain them.
It's never hearts and minds. It's never the threat of communism or the spread of peace. It's business.
The problem with the truth is that the truth is. You can't really shift the truth, that's why it's the truth. No matter how many facts you try to throw at it, no matter your angle or perceptions, you can't really spin the truth. You can spin perception, and the perception may affect your thought process and therefore your reality view of the truth, but the truth is.
Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to merge our system with theirs, and of course with those of the rest of the world, to form some kind of a world brotherhood, a world union. A world government, to be exact.
The fact that the Washington Post had to brief America that Homeland Security finds it okay to detain your electronic media, your laptop or anything, your iPod, when you come into an airport in America, a foreigner or an American citizen.
One thing is for certain, and that is that there's a lot of crazy stuff flying through the air. It doesn't matter who's responsible for it, but what does matter is that there is a lot of different material that we can't see that is being broadcast through the air. Now, it's true that maybe some of it out there is mind control.
And now, the news for you.
And it's a new day out here on the internet. Today is Monday, January 20th, 2012. Today, this day, February 20th, back in the year 1980, we lost a great vocalist. After some heavy drinking, Bon Scott, vocalist for the heavy metal band AC/DC, was found in his friend's auto, choking on his own vomit. Now, I really hope that's not the way I end up going. But who knows? You might be the lucky finder of my bloated corpse choking on my own vomit in your car. She's got the jack. Probably on jack. She's got the jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack. I think this song is a completely different meaning to French people. She's got the jock. Never mind. Yes, never mind, because you are listening to the brand new Blasphemy, that is Newsreel X, the new WOG global sit rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. The news you need, and the bad comedy you need, to stay alive and fight against the core political tyranny that's trying to enslave you. You can follow along and check my facts on my Facebook at facebook.com/NewsreelX. You are free to distribute, ridicule, destroy, or do anything else with this podcast as you see fit. We're not broadcasting from Second Life at this time, but we're broadcasting from the cynical, cold First Life. The life where the Senate committee meeting about women's reproductive rights had no women! You can't make that shit up. But Newsreel X and Rant Radio and the rest of Rant Media have taken a stand for free speech. And just by listening to the blasphemy that is Newsreel X, so have you. Now, there wasn't a show last week. I don't think anyone really was crying about it. I had caught a pretty bad cold, and when it came around to the time to record the show, I had no voice. Which is probably a good thing, because I was getting a little downtrodden by all the... the way that the news has been going, and just how it just feels like every at every turn, there's some other government force wanting to track every one of our steps and to take away some more of our civil liberties. So I wanted to do a whole show of just things that we should be happy about, or things that we should be thankful for. Within the WOG community, technology and all that. But I was getting sick, and I couldn't think of too many things to be overly happy about. And then I went full into like green snot mode. It was pretty bad. But I'm feeling much better today, and thank you everyone in the Rant Radio IRC chat room for wishing me well. You've all been really sweet. But let us get into the news. And we know what you're thinking, because we paid a firm to watch you and tell us what you're thinking, news. This is from activistpost.com. A few other sites have mentioned this as well. FEMA solicits its firm to monitor media coverage of their activities. This week, FEMA announced they were seeking their public relations and media monitoring help from a private contractor. The Federal Emergency Management Agency opened the bidding for commercial media broadcast monitoring services, quote-unquote, on February 15th, posted right on the government's Federal Business Opportunities website. FEMA is seeking media monitoring firms who will be responsible for rapidly monitoring, archiving, and measuring all news and transcripts related to their activities 24/7. They expect to be able to evaluate the, quote-unquote, publicity value of media coverage and possess editing capabilities, quote-unquote. Other responsibilities include the distribution of live and pre-recorded materials, propaganda, to the broadcast news, independent media, and the internet, to monitor the effectiveness of public affairs messaging. Now, that's a quote-unquote that really... It's, pretty much it's a long way to say, lie to you. A little psyops. Monitor the effectiveness of public affairs messaging. I'm gonna put that on my resume. Below is the full text, so if you go and check out the activistpost.com listing on this, it has the full... statement of work that they have trying to solicit companies. There's a great part back here in the scope of work section. The contractor shall provide at least 11 accessible accounts or individual passwords to access the service. The service shall provide unlimited online access to clips from all U.S. television networks and major Nielsen markets 24/7. They're really wanting every single part of the media to be analyzed and looked at for what we, citizens, or the media think about what they're doing. Somehow wanting to stay ahead of the curve of backlash of what's going on here. They also shall provide a means to download the limited number of clips and transcripts for internal FEMA distribution to key individuals. The service shall provide media statistics, including audience exposure and publicity value. I love that. That's a great little buzzword. That's going to be the buzzword of 2012, publicity value. So, the whole thing with this is that FEMA is pretty much following Department of Homeland Security in the act of watching coverage and public reaction of what they're doing. So, pulling everything together from media sources to social media sources, as well as blogs and the comment sections of your local daily paper, to give them a better idea of how well they're fucking us. So, this kind of follows behind that, where FEMA follows DHS in monitoring news coverage of its activities. This is pulled from Prison Planet. That's why I have two sources here. I love Prison Planet, but I will never, I'll never give you guys a story that only Prison Planet is talking about. Love Alex Jones, love what he does. Some of his writers are a bit off the wall. So if there isn't a second source, if no one else is talking about it, then I'm going to wait. But here we go. Federal Emergency Management Agency has followed the footsteps of the DHS and looking to hire a private contractor that will monitor news coverage. The program is similar in nature to the DHS security monitoring efforts that stoked controversy in a congressional hearing, which wanted to talk about this a bit. The lead into the show was a little mashup I did of a KMFDM track called Terror with slices of audio from this congressional hearing about the DHS monitoring our social networking sites. The program is similar in nature to Department of Homeland Security that stoked controversy in a congressional hearing that emerged from the DHS had hired an outside contractor. General Dynamics, that's the name of the company. I'd really love to see who's behind General Dynamics. Information systems to monitor social media outlets along with a list of websites on a 24/7, 365 basis in order to uncover any media reports that reflect adversely on the U.S. government and department. Funny, FEMA definitely used some newspeak here with the whole... description of to monitor the effectiveness of public affairs messaging, while DHS just comes out and says to uncover any media reports that reflect adversely on the U.S. government and our department. Looks like someone in FEMA is going, maybe we shouldn't look like complete morons like DHS. What kills me about the congressional hearing that was the other day, where it seemed like a bipartisan attack, both the Dems and the Republicans, or Republicrats, as they could be all of them called, giving a two-pronged attack on these guys from General Dynamic, about how their monitoring works and who is in charge of the monitoring, and who sends them out to do what they do. The thing that kills me about it is that our government wants these people to do this. One side of our government hired these people to monitor what we do and to tell them what we do. And then at the same time, another piece of the government is doing a fake about face of, oh, I'm I'm so surprised. It's like that scene in Casablanca when the police come in and it's like, gambling? Oh, I'm so surprised there's gambling in here. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. It was completely cognitive dissonance for me to try to sit through the little bit of footage that they released of a congressional hearing. They didn't release all of it. They released four or five videos. Some of the witness testimony wasn't there. I haven't looked through a full transcript, but it was dry. And really no answers. So at the same time that our government is saying, we want to monitor to you, we want to pretty much take away free speech and make you feel like a prisoner for expressing any dissent with the government, we have the other side of our government who is part of it, part of the problems, part of the good old boys club, acting surprised and like they're actually going to do something about it. But they won't. It's all just, they call it political theater for a reason. They'll wring their hands and give a tisk-tisk to these members of the DHS who are monitoring us. And at the same time, these people approved the Patriot Act. These people are pushing SOPA through. These are the people that really have no handle on reality and technology. But in to keep this going, in technology and my voting news, with these primaries that just never seem to end, we got old Mitt Romney and the Gingrichter and Ron Paul and Santorum, which I don't understand how anyone can look at this guy and take it seriously. I have a feeling that they keep him in the media and they keep him in the race to make Mitt Romney seem more lovable, because that guy's just cold. I don't know what it is about Romney, but he's just I don't think there's any life behind those eyes. It's freaky. But from the Maine GOP, this is from Politico.com. Maine GOP results went to spam. Maine Republican Party Chairman Charlie Webster has admitted that the state primary made numerous clerical errors in counting the state's caucus results, even omitting votes because emails went to spam with the reporting tallies. Now, this is something about with voting machines, which I'm very much against voting machines. They're easily hackable. The people that were commissioned to build them made them that way. They were told to make them that way. And there's no receipt. Hell, you get a receipt at every ATM. You get a receipt when you buy a pack of gum at CVS, but you can't get a receipt of your vote. And now, with Mr. Webster coming out, Charlie Webster here saying, well, we didn't count the votes because when the machine sent them to us, they went right into our spam folder. On Saturday, he declared former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney the winner of Maine's presidential preference poll by fewer than 200 votes, even not all municipalities had reported. We've corrected those clerical errors and we'll send those numbers out soon, Webster said. So, for example, in Portland, the state's party results originally showed that Paul won by 15 votes, when in reality, Romney won by 15 votes, Mr. Webster said. In addition, he said about half a dozen towns never added the tally on election night, and that in a couple of cases, emails from municipalities reported caucus results went to spam in the state party's email system. The vote figures might be altered slightly, he said, but they would not change. On Saturday, Webster declared that Romney won the non-binding caucus by 3 percentage points. That's a slim margin. But this stuff is... I could care less about the whole primary thing. On both sides, primaries are just to rally the support and get the money flowing in. And they gotta play to their base, and I guess nut jobs like Santorum are able to get these people out to vote, and Ron Paul, who seems to be the only reasonable politician in the race, seems like he just keeps getting cut down at every turn. And with this whole votes going into the spam folder story, this is suspicious. I'm not sure about buying into this whole Ron Paul is being kept down by the rest of government. You know, he's part of government. Of course, he is again and again the one person to stand out in government when things smell fishy. But you know, if they wanted him to go away, they could probably make him go away. It'd probably be easier to fabricate some sort of crazy story, maybe Photoshop some pictures of him with little children, or you know, assassinate his identity. Not so much assassinate him, but they, you know, might be able to find a way to get rid of all credibility he might have or anything like that. And it'd probably be a lot easier than trying to get the whole media behind slighting him. But hell, it might just be the whole Republican primary machine that's trying to throw him under the bus and doing everything, including making the party chairman, Charlie Webster, look like a moron by not checking his spam folder. And what the hell? I wonder what kind of email this guy is using for voting results. Like, if we go back to just talking about how, you know, you don't get a receipt when you're voting, and what kind of technology is this? It's like, screw it. Who cares if the boxes, like the black box machines, are secure? If the machines are then going and sending the email out on an unsecure network, and it's going into a spam folder, or going into any sort of folder that's not designated to go straight to on a secure network, with some sort of encryption, it's anything can happen. You know, somebody could have Packet Sniffer up and be just watching the network traffic and seeing what's going through and grabbing what they need along the way. Maybe mocking up their own email, knowing what the format of the email is that would be coming in with the tallies, and then sending a faux one. All of it just makes me hate voting machines and digital voting. You know, but hell, even when there was real paper ballots and you filled them out and handed them in and people counted them by hand, elections were being rigged and bought and sold. It was just done in different ways. This just makes it so much easier. Just like with everything else in technology, things become so much easier. Things become quicker. So you're able to steal an election at the speed of bits. And in We Know Who Your Friends Are news, this is from bbc.co.uk, social apps harvest smartphone contacts. This was, I believe, sent to me from Mute. Twitter has admitted copying entire address books from smartphones and storing the data on its servers, often without customers' knowledge. Access to address book is enabled when users click the Find Friends feature on their smartphone apps. Two U.S. congressmen have written to Apple asking why the firm allows the practice on its iPhone without giving them a cut. The practice came to light when an app developer in Singapore, a Mr. Aaron Thampy, noticed that his contacts had been copied from his iPhone address book without his consent. iPhone apps by social sites including Facebook, Foursquare, Instagram, Food Spotting, and Yelp are also reported to access your address book. Critics have noticed that these apps are all available for download from Apple's iTunes Store, even though the practice of copying address book contacts without prior consent appears to violate its user guidelines. Yep. Apple wants to screw you. They don't want anyone else to do it on their dime. The Apple guidelines say that apps that read or write data outside its designated container will be rejected. They added, apps cannot transmit data without a user obtaining the user's prior permission. So, there we go, in black and white, showing where social media, even without the DHS telling it to, harvesting your contacts and phone numbers. They know who your friends are.
Don't worry. We know who your friends are. And we're one of your friends. Come. Come to Twitter. Come and let us be one of your friends.
I slay me. And this is just another situation of showing information is the new currency. I just think that all the time now, where it's you are the commodity. If a service is free, Twitter, etc., you are the commodity. Your information is the commodity, the currency. And it's not enough for them to know where we're going, what we're buying. But they want to know who we're doing it with. And want to catalog us by who our friends are, which we're not the elite. We are the peasants. We're the people down here on the bottom with no power and no money. We can't buy our way into politics, and we can't buy ourselves a nice government. We're just the people living day by day down here. But they know who our friends are, and when FEMA's had enough of reading bad news stories about themselves, and they open up the camps, they'll be able to make sure that you and your friends are together in a nice little fenced-in camp to keep you and your friends safe. Let's keep you and your friends safe. You want your friends to be safe, don't you? So, we'll keep this going with you and I being the commodity in Google is also fucking Apple news. Google tricked Apple Safari in order to track users. So Apple's just getting screwed twice now. Once with the contacts, and now we have Google also tracking Apple's commodity. The Wall Street Journal reports that Google used special code to sidestep the privacy settings in their browser and track web users. The Wall Street Journal reported today that Google and other ad companies have been using a special code to sidestep privacy settings in Apple Safari browser and track web users on desktop computers and the iPhone. The journal also said that one of Google's sites, in language that has been since removed right down the memory hole, the internet giant has said Safari users could rely on the browser's privacy settings to avoid being tracked by Google. None of us can avoid being tracked by Google now. And remember, guys, starting March 1st comes the big conglomeration. All the Google sites coming together, all your information going to one place. They know what you look at, what you buy in the Google shops, what you're searching for. If you have not downloaded Ghostify yet, it's time to get yourself a copy. The privacy setting code, which the journal and Google disabled after being contacted by the paper, appeared to have been used to let members of the Google Plus social network sign in, and then while moving around the web, click buttons and ads that are part of the Google's DoubleClick ad network. What I wonder about this is, who the fuck is on Google Plus in the first place? I can honestly say that I don't know anybody in my life that's on Google Plus. No one in my work life, no one in my personal life. The guy that I buy beer from at the local gas station. Who the fuck is on Google Plus? Can someone tell me that? Just send me a message. Someone from Google Plus, send me a fucking message. Okay. Safari's default privacy settings prevented the DoubleClick setup from placing a tracking cookie to determine if the user had signed into Google Plus. Safari normally blocks cookies used by networks and others to track people. The code reportedly tricked Safari into letting a tracking cookie be placed. The journal said that though the cookie placed by Google were set to expire in 12 to 24 hours, they could sometimes result in extensive tracking of Safari users because of a technical quirk in Safari that allows companies to easily add more cookies to a user's computer once the user has installed at least one cookie. The journal said Google DoubleClick ads containing the privacy-skirting code were found on major sites, including AOL.com, who the hell goes there, Match.com, well, I guess if you're looking to date someone, TMZ.com, I guess if you need a new Chris Brown biting the fingers off of his Rihanna stories, YellowPages.com, I go there when I need a escort for the evening, and others, and the rest. These sites, however, apparently didn't know about the code. The journal said that an Apple representative told the paper that Apple was working to prevent the sidestepping of Safari's privacy settings. Well, that's nice. Seems like Apple is getting it both ways. First, the contacts on your phone are being taken, and then when you go and surf the net, that information's being taken too. Poor Apple. And now, in heroin news, taken from the dailymail.co.uk, Afghan drug war debacle. Blair said smashing opium trade was a major reason to invade, but 10 years on, heroin production is up from 185 tons a year to 5,800 tons a year. Oh, let me get a vein. Sing it, Lou Reed. Sing it. And I'm closing in on death. Woo! The West is losing the heroin war in Afghanistan. 10 years after Tony Blair pledged that wiping out the drug was one of the main reasons for invading. Despite spending $18 billion with a B pounds and the conflict, which has so far cost the lives of almost 400 British troops, production of the Class A drug by the Afghan farmers rose between 2001 and 2011 from just 185 tons to a staggering 5,800 tons. Now, you don't need Lou Reed to tell you that's a lot of heroin. That's an increase of 61%. Man, I don't know what it is about this song, but you just get all, like, calm in these little middle sections. Just want to light some candles. Get your spoon out. Oh, yeah. Feel it rushing through the veins now. 90% of heroin sold on Britain's streets is still made from opium coming from Afghanistan. The United Nations yesterday warned that the situation was out of control. I wonder if they're going to write a very strongly worded letter about it. Cutting the supply of heroin was one of the prime reasons for giving then Prime Minister Tony Blair in 2001 the right to send troops. 3 weeks after the attack in America's Twin Towers, Mr. Blair said, "The arms the Taliban are buying today are paid for by the lives of young British people buying their drugs on British streets. This is just another part of their regime that we should seek to destroy." Yes, that's my British. Some 15% of Afghanistan's gross national product right now comes from drug-related exports, about $1.6 billion each year. Gotta love that. They're getting $1.6 billion a year. Britain spent $18 billion fighting it. Britain alone has spent an estimated $18 billion, and a further $4 billion is said to have been earmarked just for this year in Afghanistan. Ironically, the Taliban had overseen a significant fall in heroin production in the months before the invasion. Their leader, collaborating with the UN, had decreed that growing poppies was un-Islamic, resulting in one of the world's most successful anti-drug campaigns.
As a result of this ban, opium poppy cultivation was reduced by 91% from the previous year's estimate. However, with the overthrow of the Taliban, opium fields returned. Woo! Doors are open. Time to grow some opium. The UN Office on Drugs and Crime estimated that the 2006 harvest, around 6,100 tons, 33 times its level in 2001, a 3,200% increase in 5 years. So in 5 years, a 3,000% increase of production of opium. The sad thing about this is our troops, both U.S. and British, end up protecting these fields. Which, you know, our government has come out, the U.S. government has come out in the past and admitted that they dealt heroin and other drugs to poor black neighborhoods during the 60s and 70s. So, you know, it's not much of a stretch to think that our troops are guarding these fields while they're out there in Afghanistan, which I shouldn't be there in the first place. But a very interesting theory was brought up to me the other day, and I take it with a grain of salt, and you as well, if you're listening, can do the same. Is if you think about traditionally opium, who is the biggest user of opium? Traditionally, where did opium use come from? And that's the Chinese. The Chinese are supposedly still a very large consumer of opium. And with the Chinese owning so much of our debt and pretty much owning all of the U.S., this was our way of getting an upper hand. So that was the theory, as it was told to me, was that our troops are in Afghanistan protecting the farmers, growing all this opium so that we can control the opium trade, therefore keeping China in line from calling in all our debts and bankrupting the United States. Of course, there's a lot of economists that will come out and say that China wouldn't go and call in our debts because we are America. We are the consumer. We are the great ruiner. If we weren't here to consume all of their exports, who would fill that void? There are other large first world countries and second world coming up to first world countries. But probably the time to take for them to reach the point of our American consumerism. At least we could be number one in something. You know, our educational system is completely in the shitter. Our healthcare is nowhere near number one in the world. But our consumerism, we're number one. We're number one. You can't match us. We will buy your shit. We don't care what it is. We don't care how cheaply it's made. We can't get our wallets out fast enough to buy your cheaply made shit that we don't need in the first place. Go on, put us further in the debt. Let me take out my credit card and buy your product that I don't need. Will it make women want to fuck me? It will? I'll buy it. You got a porcelain hairnet that'll make women want to fuck me? I'll buy it. You got a car that'll make women want to buy it? Wait, women buy me? Wait, no. You get what I'm talking about. And if you do get what I'm talking about, you should probably get some professional help, because I have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. I am just a guy ranting on the internet. And I don't even have the finesse or the mental fortitude that Sean Kennedy had. At least he made sense. The other day I was listening to an old newsreel. It was April 8th, 2005. And I think it was one of the ones back when he used to do day-to-day shows, which blew my fucking mind, because the amount of work it takes to even do this on a weekly basis with a job and everything else going on. But his energy level, I just don't know how the hell he did it. Just ranting and ranting and ranting for a whole hour without any drop in the pace or the energy. That's why Sean Kennedy is the fucking man. And I'll say that again. Sean Kennedy is the fucking man. And now, in warm leatherette, car crash edition news. Every day, about 20 Florida police cars crash into something. That's every day. Every year, those crashes kill 20 people, hurt 2,400, and cause about $25 million in property damage. This is all done in a report by the Orlando Sentinel. The Sentinel analyzed 5 years of Florida vehicle crash data, 1.6 million of them, to determine how often Florida law enforcement officers crash while in department vehicles. About 7,400 crashes a year involve cops. In fact, though average drivers receive citations if they're at fault in crashes, which is about 64%, officers in Florida are only cited in the 11% range. The crashes, in which officers are at least partially to blame, are usually preventable, the data shows. Cops drive too fast, they look at their onboard computers while on the road, but mostly they drive carelessly. The Sentinel investigation looked at all Florida crashes from 2006 through 2010 that involved agency-owned vehicles. They found that most cop crashes happen while officers are simply driving, not while they're chasing someone or racing into an emergency with lights and sirens deployed. Many officers who crash repeatedly. In fact, 26 officers had tallied 4 or more crashes in that same time period. The associated costs are staggering. During the 5-year period, crashes involving officers caused more than $126 million in property damage. And that doesn't include medical expenses or legal claims. This goes to tell some very, very sad stories. Erskine Bell Jr. was stopped at a red light on Mount Lane Boulevard? Mount Maitland? I think Maitland Boulevard in 2008. When Altamont Springs police officer Mark Maupin plowed into his car at 104 miles per hour. Now the 23-year-old cannot walk, talk, or hold his own head up. He requires round-the-clock nursing and spends much of his day in a hospital bed in the front room of his family's home. Well, there's something to be thankful for. Not being rammed into by a Florida police officer and spending the rest of my life in a wheelchair shitting myself. The officer was ticketed for failure to use due care and not wearing a safety belt. Maupin, the police officer, now 52, paid an $1,100 fine and lost his driver's license for 90 days. He resigned as the department prepared to fire him. The city did agree to pay Bell's family about $2 million. Well, of course, they paid him the $2 million when they found out that the Bells were going to sue. Many of the officers, however, in these crashes face little or no traffic penalties when they cause the traffic crashes. In 2008, a Palm Beach County deputy fell asleep while driving 73 miles per hour in a 50 mile per hour zone, crossed into oncoming traffic, and killed a man on his way to work. The deputy was not ticketed or charged. This goes on. Another fun story. Pensacola officer in 2009 tasered a 17-year-old boy in a bicycle from his moving patrol car. Imagine that. Driving and tasering. I wonder if they train them to do that. So he tasered him, trying to stop him, and then ran him over, killing the teen as he tumbled to the ground. And of course, the cop was not ticketed or charged. Any of you ranters out there in Florida, move. In Central Florida, the percentage of crashes caused, at least in part, by law enforcement during the 5-year period is 30%. This is slightly higher than the nationwide average. So, the rest of us are fucked too. So Florida does win the crown of being a few percentage points higher than anywhere else in the country for this sort of behavior. But it seems that no matter where you are in the U.S., cop's gonna get you. You know, he's either gonna pepper spray you at a rally or a march, or they're going to beat you on the side of the road, or they're not even gonna pull you over. They're gonna tase you from their car and then run over you with it. Ah, oh, man. If I could become a cop, I would love to taser someone while driving. I'm driving, I'm tasering, I'm driving, I'm tasering. You got your driving and my tasering. You got your tasering and my driving. Two great flavors that go together. Oh, I slay me. So, in this week's Cyberpunk Kit, this is more like human kit, not really straight out Cyberpunk Kit. This is something separate than a bug out bag, but this is from AdventureMedicalKits.com. They make these great kits, all different styles. Ultralight, watertight. From cleaning wounds and dressing blisters to treating muscle aches, pains, and symptoms of allergic reaction, the Ultralight Watertight 3 packs a lot of first aid and a little space. Whether you're whitewater kayaking, mountain biking, or hiking, this is your personal kit. So these are going for $9 a piece. They also have some other kits for professionals, for mountain biking, for sportsmen. Let's see what the hunter kit looks like here. Check them out. If not only for ideas of what you should have in a first aid kit in your house and or in your car, in your bug out bag. The thing that I learned is to have multiple first aid kits. You don't want to be raiding your bug out bag every time you cut yourself shaving. And you don't want to be having to search around for things if you do end up having to leave your house. So it's always good to have separate kits for separate needs. But check that out, if only for the ideas of what to go and buy yourself, AdventureMedicalKits.com. For this week's Daily Hack, this is a website I came across, SquatThePlanet.com. This is a website geared towards people, vagabonds, hobos, anyone else who may not be living within the system, or if you're looking to get off the grid. It's a forum site. Has everything from people looking for trip partners to people offering housing to people saying where there's safe places to stay, pictures and video, events that are going on, urban exploration, ride shares, food shares. This is something that I think everyone should take a peek at, if not only for the fact that by going through this forum for a couple hours and reading some of the stories, it'll make you a little bit more thankful for the bed you sleep on at night. But really, the knowledge that is listed here from these people's first-person experiences can be very, very useful if you need to drop off of the grid. This is going to give you an idea of where you could be staying, where you could be getting meals in different parts of the country, how to traveling. There's a whole section on traveling of freight trains, where you could easily grab a freight train, the things to look out for when riding freight trains. But freight trains are a great way if you're looking to get from one part of the country to another without people knowing where you are and how you're traveling. So check it out, SquatThePlanet.com. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back next week with the news that you need to survive. This show is free to distribute. Give it to Grandma, give it the finger, give it a chance. If you have any info you'd like to send me, you can do so at newsreelx@gmail.com. starting March 1st. That will not be the address. If you like the music in the background, I've been playing the Coffin Caddies, an album they put out a few years ago called, I think it's I Dream of Jack-O-Lanterns. So I'll leave you with a track from that album. And as a wise man once said, we'll never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. Until next time, that's what Sean Kennedy might have said. In server, in strength, end of line.